You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We just heard from Assemblymember and Speaker Emeritus Anthony Rendon, who earlier this year led the nation's first Select Committee on Happiness and Public Policy Outcomes. But what does it mean to study and measure a subjective emotion like happiness? How does a happier population change society as a whole? Finally, how can policy both shape and be influenced by happiness? Here to shed some light on the impact and relevance of studying happiness are two Sacramento State professors who also testified before that select committee. Maliksha Demir is the Riki Singh Endowed Professor in Happiness, and Ted Lasher is a Professor of Public Policy and Administration. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To start off, what was it like for the two of you to speak to a legislative committee about happiness? Is this something you've ever done before? Professor Demir, let's start with you.
No, this was my first time, and I am proud to be part of that process. I was super excited because happiness is an important experience in our lives, and I was super proud of my legislators paying attention to this important issue, and it felt great to learn from my colleagues and share my expertise on different topics.
What was a major takeaway that you wanted them to learn?
I learned that happiness is not a luxury, but it's a necessity, and it is possible to make changes in our social policies that would result in people's happiness over time.
Professor Lasher?
Yeah, I was very excited as well that they were doing this. I've testified to the legislature on other matters that are more traditional legislation, so it was exciting and unusual to have that kind of interest in life satisfaction among the lawmakers themselves. And I like the fact that they seem to be reaching fairly broadly into both policy and into interventions and other sorts of things.
Professor Demir, you're the Riki Singh Endowed Professor in Happiness at Sac State. That's a pretty interesting job title.
Oh, yes, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
What does it mean to be a professor of happiness?
The endowed position was created to promote happiness on our campus and in communities in California. And this was created thanks to generous support by Riki Singh, a former graduate of Sac State. And we are achieving our goal by, first of all, contributing to our curriculum. Sac State students, psychology students, can now take a class on psychology of happiness, which will be hopefully available to Sac State students in general in the short term. And we are also delivering talks, you know, workshops, and then other events for our communities, ranging from Girl Scouts to California Judges Association. So we are also trying to promote happiness on our campus. We have been organizing Sac State Happiness Days for the past 2 years. So we are trying to promote happiness, raise awareness about the importance of happiness on our campus. So this is, and also doing research at the same time. So this is what it entails to be an endowed professor in happiness.
So everyone wants to be happy. I think a lot of us are pursuing greater happiness, and each idea brings us to greater happiness. But you go a little bit deeper than that. What is the significance of happiness in life?
That's a fantastic question. Again, I want to reiterate that happiness is not a luxury, but it's a necessity in our lives. And this is coming thanks to decades of research convincing, demonstrating that happiness confers a variety of benefits in different life domains. Happy people are healthier. They live 10 years longer. Happy people are more creative. Happy people are more altruistic, more prosocial. They are more likely to pay attention to environmental issues, social issues. They have better relationships. So it's great. Happiness provides a lot of benefits to the individual and our society and our community. So that's why it's. I was so proud that we had a select committee on happiness and public policy outcomes.
And what are the metrics? Is there a universal, widely recognized set of metrics for determining a person's happiness?
That's a great question. Thanks to decades of research, we do now have well-established, reliable, and valid scales to assess how happy someone is. And the most dominant framework in my field of research is called the tripartite model of subjective well-being. Subjective well-being is a term used interchangeably with happiness. And according according to this model, we can assess one's happiness by focusing on the cognitive domain, how satisfied someone is with their life. And also we focus on how frequently they experience positive emotions and negative emotions. And then to sum up, it's subjective well-being is being content with your life and the predominance of positive emotions over negative emotions. And we have well-established scales, reliable and valid scales, to assess how happy someone is based on these dimensions.
And what's the role of income in those metrics?
That's a great question. Income certainly matters, but I believe, you know, Professor Lesher is more good with this one. Income is really important, but my understanding is that it is not as important as social relationships, if I may, and things that people do in their, you know, free time and then with whom they do those activities.
Professor Lesher, what can you tell us about the role of income and happiness?
One thing to note is that there, to assess income and things like that, you need big surveys with measures of life satisfaction, and then you need to be able to compare lots of people, maybe in different countries or in the same country, at different levels of happiness, controlling for a bunch of other factors. And I think it would be fair to say that, yes, income does, on average, increase happiness, even controlling for some other things. But as my colleague said, it is far from being the only thing. Even controlling for income, what you find is that, for example, just one example of social relationships, marriage is associated with happiness. Even controlling for income and controlling for a number of other sorts of factors. There's also some evidence that, although this is a little more controversial, that past a certain point, at least for some people, income doesn't matter anymore, so that it sort of, there's a ceiling sort of effect there.
Is there a point at which such a high income happiness actually starts to drop?
I don't think, there's not much evidence of that. It's more a case of plateauing.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Sac State professors Maliksha Demir and Ted Lesher about studying happiness and its impact on public policy. And so building off of that, Professor Lesher, you're a professor of public policy and administration. What policies can have an impact on boosting happiness?
Well, again, some of the impact is indirect. But let me give you an example of a policy that's somewhat more direct because state policy has more control of it. My colleagues and I studied the influence of having health insurance on happiness, controlling for a whole bunch of other things, including people's own perceptions of their own health. So if you take people who are similar with respect to income, and marriage and education and even their own perceptions of health, it turns out that having health insurance is significantly more likely to make people satisfied with life, or probably even more precisely, well, especially likely, less likely to make them dissatisfied. So the efforts that the legislature has made to expand health insurance are very likely to increase happiness on average in the state.
So is that found to be like the biggest bang for the buck for happiness?
It's one of the big bangs for the buck, yes.
Professor Demir, do rates of happiness change with people as they grow older?
Oh, well, yes, of course. But, you know, happiness is likely to fluctuate across lifespan. And good news from the research is that we are likely to experience more positive emotions and less negative emotions as we get older. But it doesn't mean that other age groups are less likely to be happy. There are things they can do, what they do and then with whom, investing in relationships, they are likely to experience happiness as well. But it's likely to fluctuate a little bit across lifespan. Again, older people are likely to be happier than younger people.
And why do you think that is?
From a lifespan perspective, we have great theoretical explanations for this. As people get older, perhaps they are less likely to be influenced by negative events. They are more likely to experience multiple emotions at the same time. And then they are more likely to focus on good things in life. And then their social networks might be perhaps shrinking a little. But it is not because... It's not because without their control, perhaps this is what they prefer, because they're focusing on the ones that make them happy, content, as opposed to the large networks people entertain, where not everybody may be contributing to one's overall well-being. So they're being more selective in terms of the relationships they have and things they do, and then they focus on these overall collectively, I guess, helping them experience higher levels of well-being.
This might be a provocative question, but does the decision to have children factor into happiness levels at different age groups?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. And then, of course, people are likely to experience elevated moods and then happiness when they have kids. But there is research showing that there is not much of a difference between families that they have kids and don't have kids. And on the other hand, having children brings on lots of responsibilities, that's for sure. And children can make people happy if they have the necessary social support and an emotional support and perhaps financial means to take care of their kids.
Yeah, and I would just add that I think there's some evidence to suggest that if parents maintain a good relationship with their children, then they are very much more likely to be happier later in life.
So it's that investment early on.
Yeah.
And are there aspects of happiness or unhappiness that just are totally unrelated to policy that policy just can't fix?
I agree with Maliksha about the importance of social connections. It's just not always clear what policy can do about that. That's not as clear as, for example, in the area of health insurance, or for that matter, we know that unemployment it really drives down happiness, even controlling for a bunch of other things, and then the government can more directly address that. Try and encourage more social relationships is important, and one of the things I admire the committee for is they paid a lot of attention to that. I'm just not sure we know as much about how to do that.
What about dense urban communities versus rural? What do the metrics say on that?
I'm actually not sure about that one, Maliksha.
I don't have a clear answer to that question, but I guess what matters is the connection to nature. We know, thanks to recent research, is making a big difference. So but if you're living in rural areas but have perfect exposure and access to the nature and outdoor environment, then it could make a big difference, I guess. From that logic, there could be a difference between the two groups.
Stepping back and looking at the big picture, what are some of the social benefits of having a happier population? Does it make people more likely to work together and tackle big social issues?
Yeah, it definitely does that. And there's some reason to believe that it's also connected to sort of general support for institutions, trust and support for government and things like that. And separating out the causality, which comes first, is a little more difficult. But there's certainly a relationship between happiness and support for key institutions.
So as we're becoming a more divided people politically, are we seeing the impacts on happiness for the population?
I don't think we can say that conclusively yet, but there's certainly reason to think that may be the case.
Do you think it's important for our California legislature to be looking into happiness as a tool to perhaps guide future policy decisions?
I think so. Again, it's partly because I think the committee rightly said that we normally just try to think about things like improving education and raising income, all of which are important. But to the extent that we can find, for example, mechanisms to increase people's ability to get outdoors because we know that's our happiness, or to that will make it easier to have social relationships, that's also often very important. And we don't necessarily look to that first in a legislative body.
What do you think, Professor Demir? What's the role of government in encouraging happiness?
I think, before we answer this question, we should, remind ourselves that happy people are more likely to donate money to charities, they volunteer more, they are even more likely to vote, they are more altruistic, and they even care more about climate change and more likely to take action. And if these are some positive things and from the perspective of the government, perhaps then they should invest in ways to address some problems or increase the possibilities for nature engagement and other things. I think it's definitely important. We can start very early in life. That is, invest in school curriculums and then include courses on happiness, flourishing, available very early in life, so that you know kids get this message as early as possible. Investing in the availability of natural parks and access to those natural parks, I think, would be wonderful considering the benefits of happiness for the society and the individual.
As we begin to close, I want to step back and really understand this term, defining this term of happiness. Is happiness the ultimate goal in life? I've heard some argue that a purposeful life is more important than being happy on a given day. But does purpose and meaning in life ultimately result in happiness? What do you think?
It's certainly important. Both of them are important. And when we talk about happiness, we are not suggesting that we should pursue happiness 24/7. And then there is recent research showing that if happiness is your ultimate goal in life, it may backfire such that you are less likely to be happy. Instead, happiness could be, you know, a byproduct of the things that you do engage in your life, investing in relationships, practicing gratitude, being kind to other people, and so on and so forth. I think they go hand in hand. And then people are likely to flourish and then experience high levels of well-being if they have both. And then also when we talk about the pursuit of happiness, we are not suggesting pursuing happiness 24/7. 24/7, it may lead to what scholars call as toxic positivity.
Toxic positivity, what's that?
It is, oh my goodness, you know, don't be sad, be happy all the time, don't worry. No, it's not possible to be happy, it's not feasible, and I personally don't recommend it at all. Instead, embrace the negative emotions that you have, but what matters at the end is having more positive than negative emotions, that what matters most for happiness. It's part of life. We have, bad days, low emotions, low days, but what is mattering at the end is the predominance of positive emotions over negative emotions. And thanks to research, we do have the means to boost your positive emotions, whether practicing your signature strengths, practicing nostalgia, practicing gratitude. So it is within your power to make a change in your overall emotions. And then together with having purpose in life, that would be a good recipe for overall well-being.
Professor Lasser, do you have thoughts on the relationship of purpose and meaning in life?
Well, I would agree with my colleague that you can pursue both and that we want to encourage that. I think in some ways what we want government to do is to especially attack sources of unhappiness. For example, we know that poverty is related to unhappiness, and not just for some of the most obvious reasons about not being able to get enough food and things, but just the stress of poverty. So whereas government may not be able to make people always happier or make things more meaningful, government may be able to do things to get rid of the worst sources of unhappiness.
Professor Demir, last question, because you got me thinking about this idea you said toxic positivity. Well, we're getting to the holiday season. As we all know, the holidays are stressful. Lots of pressure to be happy and joyful. On the whole, are people generally happier during the holidays?
I would guess so. Yes, because it brings on different communities. It highlights the importance of relationships. It's likely to boost the mood and then well-being of people. Yes, certainly. But during these times, please remember, you know, conflict and negative emotions are part of life. Instead of just ignoring them, just experience them as they are. But remember, it's the predominance of positive emotions over negative emotions. That's what matters for overall happiness.
So you're saying to focus or just be present with your negative emotions?
Yes, be in peace with them, but at the same time, you know, seek after positive emotions. Prioritize positivity in your life. It could be a good way to combat toxic positivity.
Like getting outside.
Getting excited, and then it depends on the person. What makes you happy? You know, to me, you know, perhaps engaging, practicing gratitude and practicing my signature strengths. But for you, it's going to be, you know, spending time in nature. As long as you find the perfect fit, that's what makes you happy, increases your positive emotions, perhaps we can overcome those challenges in our wonderful pursuit.
Well, Professor Demir, it's probably a good place to close it. I'm happier now than I was before this segment started. And Professor Lasher, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Professor Maliksha Demir is the Recky Singh Endowed Professor in Happiness at Sac State. And Ted Lasher is a professor of public policy and administration. We've been talking about studying happiness and how this emotion can impact and guide public policy. Coming up next, we'll talk to a chocolate expert about what goes into the finest quality cacao, that makes me happy, and how Latin cacao inspired his cafe in downtown Sacramento. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.